What's up, family? Jared the Boss Man here. You're tuned into the Boss Man Show on AM 1010, AM 1430, 1055 The King. Check The King out at 105theking.com and The Boss Man Show at bossmanshow.com. Hit me up on Instagram, The Boss Man Show, Twitter at Boss Man Show, and Facebook, Boss Man Show. It's The Boss Man on your radio.
Listen to The Boss Man Show with your host, JR, Saturdays at 9 a.m. right here on AM 1010, The King.
BS3 Network, changing the way you watch TV.
Yes, BS3 Network, changing the way you watch TV, covering content and hot topics from A to Z, sports, music, society and culture, movie reviews, you name it, we have it. Check it out on bs3network.com or check us out on Roku, BS3 TV on Roku, as well as check out your favorite podcast on all podcast platforms or spreaker.com/BS3Network.
You are now tuned to BS3 Network.
All right, you folks, we're back on the Boston Man Show with special guests. We have the Canadian men's national team's head coach here with us, Nathaniel Mitchell, on the Boston Man Show. He's repping his Canadian flag, Maple Leaf on his corner zip right there, the hoodie right there. You see, repping here already, man. We're going to talk about his Canadian players as well. So we're on the show with a great guy, man, Nathaniel Mitchell. Brother Nate, how you doing, my guy? How you doing up there today, man?
No, I'm doing great, man. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on the show and let's talk basketball and let's lock into what we got to do.
No doubt, man. Let me ask you first, brother, like, for you, your basketball journey, when did you decide you want to get into coaching? Man, I know a lot of guys want to play for a long time, be players, but for you, it was coaching. So what kind of triggered your mind to want to get into this coaching thing and give back to the game that way?
You know, just like as a player, every time I played for a coach anywhere, they always hinted at me, you know, at some point you're going to be pretty good coach. Like, you understand what's going on. You're able to lead, talk to the players, relate to my teammates that were cool. I had a coach really at Georgia Perimeter College when I was in Atlanta, David Dennis. He was always instrumental in like, man, you got to make sure you get into coaching. Coach White, Gerald White was big on that too. Mike Curry. Those were like my Georgia people who were very instrumental in me carrying this coaching situation on. And so just from a young time, from my playing days, trying to get into it, and then right after finished playing, I actually started with girls high school basketball and moved into AAU with the boys in high school and college, and here I am years later, you know, coaching with the senior men's national team as well as professionally overseas, after some stints in the NBA.
No doubt. And for you as a young kid, my dad's a coach, so I was always around basketball. My dad was a coach. So for you, kind of what brought you to basketball as a kid? For me, it was been around my dad, been in the gym with my father. So for you, what kind of brought you to the game as a kid, man?
I would say my brothers. You know, growing up in a community, it's a close-knit. Everybody's playing. You know, you could say it's an at-risk neighborhood. So everybody's hooping, doing their thing, you know what I mean? And at the end of the day, my brothers were the ones that were playing, that I wanted to play. And that kind of like made me fall in love with it. And, you know, every kid plays video games, every kid watches it on TV, tries to figure it out. Being a kid from Toronto, Canada, I think that there's a lot of influence with the Raptors popping off in the 90s and Vince Carter and Damon Stoudemire. That definitely helped kind of just, you know, push the narrative of what we wanted to do basketball-wise.
You know, for me, man, I was a Raptors fan because of one reason. Carlos Rogers.
Okay,
Because I went to TSU's basketball camp as a kid. And I met him, had autographs. So I, as a kid, had the dinosaur hat, the little snapback, Toronto Raptors hat. I got
the season,
so I should rock because my man from basketball camp, Carlos Rogers, you know, inspiring me as a young buck in the streets, man. Taking time to talk to a little punk from Atlanta. So I was like, man, I'm a Raptors fan. I like this dude. We got drafted, so I cheered for him as a kid.
Yeah, for sure. No, I definitely remember that name. I remember watching him play, really skilled wing, four man, three man. He was definitely influential here in Toronto as well.
No doubt, man. Talk about this. Having a pro team with your city's name on the front of it, man. Having the Raptors come up there, expansion team, had Vancouver over there in British Columbia, but had been from Toronto. Have a team you can cheer for. Go to the Sky Dome before they built the new arena out there. Watch those guys play, man. How cool was that for you as growing up to see a team in your home city, man?
No, it was dope for sure. I'd also say like it was actually came full circle. A couple of years I actually worked for the Raptors as an assistant coach, and I remember being in the facility and then looking up and seeing like, oh my gosh, that used to be the Sprite Zone they used to call it, where you get like two tickets for $10 or something. We really didn't have, an opportunity to go to the games unless you were sitting up there. And then I remember before I started working there, I actually went up to the top row and kind of took a picture, kind of like, this is where I used to sit. And then now, you're on the bench, sitting on the floor with, coaching NBA players is really cool. So definitely remember all those things and having that city vibe. It's very supportive here of the Toronto fans. And now they're getting a WNBA team, the Toronto Tempo. So for all the little girls, the young females that aspire to be playing professionally, it's really impacting them as well. So it's great to see, the environment on the men's side as well as the women's side.
What's crazy about the Toronto Raptors is no matter what, win or lose or bad or good, the fans pack out the arena all the time, man. And talk about just the passion for basketball up there, because no matter what, y'all always out, sell out, man. The fans are alive up there in Toronto.
Yeah, no, the city's very supportive when it comes to basketball. Men, women, summer tournament, national team, like it's very important for them to see their teams win, very just to play, the excitement. So if you come here during the summer, I mean, Drake used to put on a big thing called the OVO Fest with his music, but he used to do it with a tournament too. So like basketball in the city is amazing. It always comes to it's like a show-out situation, you know what I mean, in the city. So everybody loves it, they support it, and it's big for everybody to continue being involved.
You work with some great guys in the NBA on the G League too, man. And let's talk about just the experience of being able to coach from the high school level up to the NBA level, now the CBA, CBA and Chinese Basketball Association, also coaching your national team now. Talk about just that coaching progression and how just seeing the hard work you put in, the hours you're watching the film, and all these guys you work for help pour into you to make you the coach you are today.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm forever grateful and in debt to like all the players and each and every player I've ever worked for, or worked with. I've had amazing clients. I kind of started this thing doing player development, you know what I mean? Just in random community center gyms around the city. People trying to get me a gym, trying to figure out a way how do we subsidize costs for youth and some of the pros that we were dealing with, but it's been amazing. Those same guys from the jump that were there that I was working with are the same guys that I'm, some of them were in my wedding. And so it was great to kind of just see the progression of a lot of the young players that, working with a 12-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid at the time, and fast forward 7, 8 years later, the kid was number three draft, RJ Barrett. He's number three pick in the draft. Seeing some of these kids like Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, when they were, 16, 17 in the gym and working with these guys, that's kind of been the progression for me, where I've been able to work with the national team, get jobs in the NBA. Eventually, I wouldn't be where I am today with all those players I ever worked with. I continue to always thank them and make sure those are like humble beginnings. But that's what it is in this business. And I always tell like young coaches coming up, like make sure your relationships are tight. You got to be able to have like, the wherewithal to be able to talk to those guys, vibe with those guys at the same time, like be able to hold them accountable too. And they got to respect you. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've been able to kind of garner over the years, which I really appreciate, just those guys giving me the opportunity to hold them accountable. But I've been good enough, just responsive, just being able to talk to them and vibe with them as well. So that's important.
And they have to trust you and know you care about them. It's kind of also like my dad always says, it's what you say and how you say it to a player. And that's mm-hmm. where they get them, where they're gonna really buy into your program or not, or buy into you or not.
No, for sure. Like, you know, how you say it is important. That's your relationship piece. I mean, holding somebody accountable can be really aggressive, like we know how some coaches can be, right? Or it can be in a soft, calming voice. Like, you got to kind of pick and choose what you want to do and say there. At the same time, like, it's very key what you said, what you say. What you say comes from your knowledge, from your experience. And if you're ever growing in this business or trying to be, you know, the best coach that you could possibly be, like, you're going to continue to grow your knowledge. Like, you can't be teaching the same thing that you were teaching 10 years ago. There's some basics that are never going to change. There's the fundamentals of the game. But they're teaching math differently than they taught 20 years ago, too. So if teachers are evolving, why aren't we coaches? And I think that's very important to, you know, take into account on how we continue to grow.
You're right about that, Nate, because, man, I spent a lot of time watching five-out offense and five-out defense. So how to counter it. So I'm still learning too. You know, I'm sitting down on the laptop over there, man. I just be looking at videos and I look, compare and contrast, because that's been a coach's son is what I do. So it's like,
I try
to help my listeners learn basketball beyond just saying basic stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's called an action. What action are they running? Action, you know? So I'm trying to teach them to fight pin downs, zooms, 45 cuts, 7 cuts, so corner dash. Right. Sometimes. So I'm trying to teach my listeners when I'm on the air here the game so they don't just say basic, simple stuff that we know. You and I would have like, nah, go a little bit, give me a little bit more than that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, the game is forever changing. You know what's crazy? Because, like I said, there's, like, fundamentals of it. Like, there's certain sets that you've ran, like, forever. Like, a horn set. People have been running horns for years, you know, back to the 80s. And now you look at basketball now, people are running horn set, but it's inverted. It's a big and a small. It's two bigs in the corner and two smalls at the elbow. It's a big handle with two small. Like, it's... You know, the variance, the variability within the set that's changing because the skills of the players is changing. You got a 6'10 guy that can handle the ball, bringing it up, throwing it to one elbow, but a point guard who's 6 foot sending a back screen for him, you're like, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, snap, what are we doing on this? You're going to pull him from the corner? Well, no, because there's a real big-time shooter in the corner that can make it. So it's very important, your alignment, along with the sets, along with your offensive concepts of when certain things happen, make you really difficult to defend. And every time you, like you said, you sit down and watch a new video or watch a new game, or you come up with something new, you know?
100%, man. And for you, Nate, when you're developing a player, how do you go about getting him to tap in to want to improve it, which weaknesses in his game? Because sometimes some guys are very insecure about that. So how do you get them to kind of want to improve their weaknesses in their games and really buy into that while focusing on their strengths at the same time as well, of course, making that better, of course, but also get them to say, hey, you want to grow as a player and develop as a player even more. Let's tap in this right here.
Yeah, I think it's very important that you identify and sit down with the athlete. Like, hey, what are your goals? Like, what are the ultimate goals that we're trying to get to? If it's becoming a better shooter, being the best player possible, you know, I think within that, you reverse engineer. Okay, well, in order to be the best player possible, you can't have any weaknesses here, right? You got to be great at something and continue to build something. If you want to be a great shooter at the end of the day, all right, we're going to start with, you know, catch and shoots. We're going to be really good. And we're going to build to off the dribble. And then out of the off the dribble, maybe we're going to go to movement shooting. You know, you got guys like, you know, you barely see guys like a Kyle Korver, J.J. Redick that can shoot on the move on the baseline anymore. We're going to develop that part. And then, you know, then we're going to develop how you shoot individually one-on-one. And then maybe we're going to add range to it. I mean, there's so many different sectors of shooting that we can start to figure out which areas. And not everybody's good in every area. You know what I mean? That's like five different levels of shooting that we just talked about that a lot of people's percentages dip depending on which area you go to. Because there's a lot of guys who can catch and shoot it, just, you know, spot up. But as soon as they put the ball down, their percentages drop to 30% or below.
That's me.
Right? So, like, being able to be good in all those different areas, focus on different areas, a lot of players to grow. And once you start, once you have that goal, if there's ever any discussion on, hey, why are we doing this? We could always come back. You told me that you want to be here. And we agreed in order to get here, this is something we have to tackle. Right. And, you know, instead of like dabbling all over the place in certain things, and we're going to get better at this in the next month and a half, 2 months. This is what we're going to get better at. You're going to go back at least to your team or whatever it is with this. And then we can see how we can evaluate it throughout the year, you know, sharpen it up through the year. And then we come back. Hey, I got another tool in my bag. You know, what if we did this? I saw this in the season that could be helpful too, according to like how their team is playing too. And I think sometimes coaches miss that boat because you got to be able to understand what that player is going into when he gets back to his team in order to apply skills and things of that nature in their environments.
No doubt. And Coach Nate, let me ask you this, man. For young players watching our interview today, how many shots should they get up a day from your perspective to be good, effective shooter, to know they can really be out there playing late in games where they don't take it off the court because they can't shoot?
Yeah. I mean, I think shooting is probably the number one skill right now that you can try to get better at as a young player. I always make this joke, but you're playing these AAU games and high school games and you don't know who's on the other team. You rarely hear people yelling from the sidelines saying, hey, get that rebounder. Or, no, the ball handler, he's open, get him. Or, you know what I mean? Oh, the passer's got to stop the passer. No, it's shooter, shoot. Like, all the way growing up, you've always heard that. So a lot of these things on the scouting report is determined on if you can make a shot or not. Whether I want to go over or under depends on if you can shoot or not. Whether I want to pull in and help on this pick and roll while the guy is rolling, if I need to tag heavier or not, depends on if you can shoot or not. If there's a good player over there and he's driving, how much help I have to influence him from not getting into the paint depends on how well my guy can shoot or not. And so the amount of shots, it's tough. I mean, you know, repetition is very important. I mean, I can tell you can shoot 1,000 shots a day, but I can't tell you exactly what's wrong with the shot. You know, that's there's variability involved that can help you get better. Are you shooting in the morning? Are you shooting in the evening? Like, are you actually spending time on it, invested time, intentional time on areas that you feel like you need work? Because I think there are areas that where, okay, I've been shooting 1,000 shots for 10 years every day, and all of a sudden I've capped. I'm still at 35%. Okay, what can I do to get to 37, 38? That may be a change. Maybe I decrease my reps and add action shooting that's more realistic. Maybe there's more defenders around. Maybe the shot contest. And that may be more transferable to the game of basketball than what I have been doing. So I don't particularly have like a set number. I do think you just need to shoot. And I think in your early ages, your form is important. Touch, technique, and confidence. You got to develop touch. You got to develop technique. And your confidence comes through your repetition. So you can shoot as much as you want and have confidence. But if you don't have touch and technique, it's going to be tough. You know what I mean? So I think all three of those can kind of help. And if you start looking at all the players in the NBA or, you know, who play at the highest level across the world, the best shooters, you know, are at least have two of those. Because I know for sure there's been people who had not the greatest technique towards the eye, but their confidence and touch is at another level. And all of a sudden you still see, well, why does that guy make shot? Nobody shoots the exact same as you go through every player. You know, everybody's, you know, their anthropometrics and are all different. You know what I mean? So it's cool just to kind of try to figure that piece out, to be honest. I'm still figuring it out.
Nah, I hear that, Coach Nate. And, man, for you, man, a coach of the national team for you. So when you're looking for guys to pick for the roster, What are you kind of looking for? Because you kind of has a deep pool to pick from. So what are you kind of looking for in a player that kind of makes, I mean, these are the best 12 guys for this national run we're going to go on. So how you kind of go about picking that in your mind? How you have those? Because what roster you have, man, it's with some tough talks with guys who don't make the whole make the roster, man.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a blessing to have these tough conversations. You know what I mean? I mean, USA probably has that every year. You know, like I know last summer they were talking about Kyrie before he got hurt, you know, wasn't selected. And he was talking about, I wish we went back to the days where we can compete for spots. But it's tough. I mean, Jaylen Brown got left off the roster. And then there were a couple guys that were on the roster, like Jason Tatum and Tyrese Haliburton, that were first team All-NBA, second team All-NBA players that didn't play that much at the Olympics. So I think obviously, as Canada, as the number one team in the world outside of the U.S. with the most NBA players, you know, obviously France is coming too with their amount of players. It's always going to be tough. And what we're looking for, obviously, we need continuity in order to beat teams that are better than us. You need the best team. And the best team is not always compiled of the top 12 players. You need guys that can do certain things. You need teams built on physicality and toughness. You're going to need shooting. And you come down to it, somebody may be better, but he might be a better shooter that fits the spacing of your team because your best player is a rim attacker. And all those things come into play. There were teams on Team USA where you can argue and say, was Tayshaun Prince one of the top 12 players in the NBA? No, but he was on that team. He provided defensive versatility, spacing on the floor, and could play a role. And I think these guys are so important. You know what I mean? The same thing with like a Derek White. Derek White's not an all-NBA player, and that's your top 15 players in the NBA. You know, obviously there's some European players in that all-NBA situation. You know, actually four of them are on the top five, right? But you got to try to figure out what the best fit is. You know, you look for shooting, you look for defensive versatility, you need ball handling and fever. Your point guard is very important. You need to make sure you have a backup point guard. You need to make sure you have a big that hopefully you ain't got to double team Joel Embiid and, you know, Nikola Jokic's. You know, so you're not in rotation because, you know, if you're in rotation out there in FIBA with these European teams, man, you are going to, they're going to be dotting your eyes, shooting that three ball really well. So we're always looking for that and trying to fine tune where you're trying to play FIBA style basketball with the NBA influence rather than NBA style basketball with a FIBA influence. And that's kind of the key to winning. So any of those players that fit that, I think are going to fit our national team as we go forward.
And also for FIBA, the shorter courts, the NBA had an extra 8 minutes to come back. In FIBA, you get down big, you could be done.
100%. 100%. That 8 minutes is a lot of possessions. That's a whole high school quarter. You know what I mean? And like me and you, we've watched plenty of NBA games. Tie game going into the fourth quarter and a team win by 20 points. Right, just because they go on a run or something like that is just, or a team that's pretty good could be down 5 or 6 points with 8 minutes to go and end up winning by 10. You know, they pulled through down the stretch. The reality is, in FIBA, 8 minutes to go in the NBA game, that game's done already. So it's even that more important to get off to good starts, to be ready to play. The possessions are lower. You can play one-on-one with somebody outside right now. If it goes to two and you don't know that person, they can score two baskets and beat you. You know, a random person can just throw the ball in blind two times. You know, but now if you try to play to 11, 15, it's a little bit tougher for them because they can't get lucky, you know, that amount of times. So the lower the possessions are always going to be in the favor of the less talented team, why it's really hard to win in the NBA in a 7-game scenario. Or in FIBA, in one game, you can win. You know, you can definitely beat somebody in one game. So there's these guys that are dominating series, winning 4-1. But what if that first game is the only game that matters and you lose? Every game is a game 7, you know, in FIBA. So it's amazing to see, and kind of the stakes rise when you're actually playing it. That's why NCAA is so exciting when they get to the tournament. You know, it's like that in FIBA all the time.
I know we're talking about a lot of offense. That's why defensively you have to bring it, because
Ooh.
A big run in FIBA, like we said, you could be done for the night. You could be, because you're on the clock, you know.
Yeah.
So the defense, you have to be locked in on scouting report, know your scout, know what we're doing, know if we're hard hedging, we're sliding two steps, when we're going to ice, what are we doing on each player. Yeah. Scouting report is going to be very important in FIBA, more so than NBA.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I also take it a step further. It's like, I think a lot of times in the NBA, you're looking at, okay, what can I do after playing this first half to make adjustments, take away something? A lot of times in FIBA, you're probably going to show your real card early. We're taking away this, and we're going to make you play a different way than what you're capable of playing normally. Like, you know what I mean? In the NBA, over time, you're kind of playing your regular principal defense, game coming after game, and you're trying to figure out, okay, hey, now we're going to make this adjustment. Oh, coach made an adjustment 5 minutes ago. They went small. They did this. Boom, 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 boom. They started doubling the post. And all of a sudden, it put that team in a panic situation, right? That may be the defensive game plan from the jump to really take and disrupt the offensive flow of the other team so that they're not capable of playing the way they normally play. So that's a great point that you're making there with, you know, scouting reports and being prepared to play.
No doubt, man. I got to ask you also, Coach, I got two more for you, man. The Chinese Basketball Association, I know people don't realize how good of the ball is over there, man, and how talented these guys really are. Because over in the States, we don't see it because of the time difference, the way it is. But talk about just of being over there coaching as a head coach, man, the talented guys you saw every night out there in the CBA.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's tough. You know, even the CBA for a long time, guys were going to play there as imports. The season would finish early, then coming and signing in the NBA late season time. You've seen multiple guys, and there's multiple examples of this over the years. But I mean, it's tough, man. I mean, I played a team last year. They had three guys that played in the NBA before, you know. Then we played the Shanghai Sharks. We're playing Eric Bledsoe and Kenny Lofton Jr. on the court at the same time. And it's like, both of these guys are tough to guard. You know, both of those guys have played multiple years in the NBA. So, and I also think that the culture in the domestic league with a lot of domestic players has gotten a lot better. You know, the coaching has gotten a lot better. They're getting a lot of influence from like European coaches coming there to being assistant coaches, and has really grown the game. And obviously they just had a guy, you know, Young Hansen, get drafted number 16 for the Portland Trailblazers in the first round this year. We just had a young kid on our team who I believe 21 years old, who I think has a chance of getting drafted soon. There's a kid from Beijing that just got on a two-way with the Brooklyn Nets. So the domestic league is definitely growing, man. The Chinese team, they just finished second. They won a silver medal in the Asia Cup. They lost to Australia in the finals. And so you're losing to Australia, who's a top five ranked team in the world right now. You know, they're definitely getting better. So I expect big things from them. The league is definitely tough.
Spoiler for you, Coach Nate, this brother. A lot of young coaches who watch my show, man. So if you can, give some nuggets for some young coaches out here who are trying to grind it out every day at the D2 level, D3 level. Hey, you give us some advice, man, to kind of get them, keep them motivated, to keep doing what they do, man.
I think it's very important for them to invest in themselves, man. And when I mean invest in themselves, they got to find some professional development opportunities, man. Reach out to people, see where you can go, sit down, watch a practice. I mean, even me and myself, I still do that. You know, last year I finished my season. 2 days later, I was on a flight to Serbia. I left China, went to Serbia, and I stayed with, you know, Red Star, a EuroLeague team, for a week and a half. Then I flew to Greece and I stayed with Olympiakos, another EuroLeague team, for a week and a half, trying to figure out what can I learn? What can I add to my offensive and defensive repertoire to get better as a coach. You know what I mean? And I think that 2.5 weeks in Europe, 3 weeks, like really changed some of my perspectives on how I wanted to approach practices and things. And I kind of took that right into my America team. And then whatever level you're at, I think it's very important to like try to find a way to just go coach a team, get into like a camp where you have to coach players and try to figure out how am I going to implement stuff when I really get a chance to do something at the level that you really want, can kind of gain some confidence. And I think that'll really, really help. And I think that a lot of coaches, sometimes they get stuck in what they're doing and forget like, yo, I still need to learn. You know what I mean? And I think that's the biggest thing. Just go and invest in yourself. And, you know, guys like yourself doing podcasts and people have opportunity to listen to people. This is learning and professional development too. So it's great to see what you're doing. And that's why your show is where it's at now.
I appreciate it, Coach. I've been, hey, 14 years strong, brother. Hope to keep it going. Yes, sir. 14, man.
Yes, sir, man. I'm honored to be on here with some of the great people you've had on here before too.
I appreciate it, brother. I'm going to try and keep this thing going as long as I can. And, no coach, before you go, man, it's on by me. As I'm the one-man band. It's
nobody. Yes, sir. This, brother. Yes, sir, man. All the better to you, man. That's big. As I keep going up, I'm going to come back, too.
I appreciate it. I love to have you back, brother. It was great to talk about with you, man. It's been fun today, brother. It really has.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it, for sure.
All right.
BS3 Network. Changing the way you watch TV.
Yes, BS3 Network, changing the way you watch TV, covering content and hot topics from A to Z, sports, music, society and culture, movie reviews, you name it, we have it. Check it out on bs3network.com or check us out on Roku, BS3 TV on Roku, as well as check out your favorite podcast on all podcast platforms or Spreaker.com/BS3Network.
You are now tuned to BS3 Network.
What's up, family? Jared the Boss Man here. You're tuned into the Boss Man Show on AM 1010, AM 1430, 1055 The King. Get The King out at 105theking.com and The Boss Man Show at bossmanshow.com. Hit me up on Instagram, The Boss Man Show, Twitter at Boss Man Show, and Facebook, Boss Man Show. It's The Boss Man on your radio.
Listen to The Boss Man Show with your host, JR, Saturdays at 9 a.m. right here on AM 1010, The King.